Closer, the Entrepreneur's Circle.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automagically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Hey there, folks. Back again, your most happy and humbled host, Eric Cabral. As usual, I'm with somebody who I am very inspired by. I met this gentleman very recently at an amazing event in Indiana, and I loved his vibe. I loved his story. I loved his energy. And I was like, dude, let's jam. Let's get on the show. So I just want to welcome really quickly, Bucky O'Neill. How you doing, brother?
Doing great. Great to be here.
Yeah. And I joked with you that I do secretly imagine you have a metal arm under there, your long sleeve shirts. For any geeky Marvel fans, you know what I'm talking about. But for those who don't know, Bucky is a world-class speaker. He's a facilitator. He's been doing this for over 20 years around the world, training coaches, creating top experts in world-class transformation. He's a master and he's a practitioner of this work, and he's a business mentor, co-founder and Legacy and Leverage, where he supports this industry leader, all the industry leaders and experts by creating their coaching businesses that produce 100K or more per month.
Let's go.
And we're ready to jam, dude. Here's the thing that's how the internet sees you. But sure. Here's how I see you. I see you, dude, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I know of you in the short amount of time we spend together, I feel like you have you're a man of faith. You believe in a source and a creator. You have a passion for what you do, for sure, dude. I mean, it's very, very evident when you talk. You're very clear on that mission. We're going to get to it in the show. You're eloquent in your words, which is great. I'm still working on my ums and ahs, but you're very, very polished, which I appreciate, you know. And dude, you vibrate at a super high frequency. For those of you who are in tune with that, when you're around people, I felt it when I was around Bucky. And that was why you were the first person that I actually approached when we were at this event. I said, dude, you want to jump on my show? And there were a lot of people I was talking to, but you were the first. And that is for a reason. So one thing I want to highlight, and as we're on the frequency topic, really quick, is that there's an article that was written in 2018 by Scientific American, and it was called "The Hippies Were Right." It's all about vibration, man.
Yeah.
And it's too long to read. TLDR. So in it, they quickly cover the concept of vibrations and like how it's in the context of quantum physics and quantum mechanics and spirituality. And, you know, to make a long story short, they're basically saying, hey, the hippies were right. This counterculture movement in the 60s, we made fun of them. But the scientific data shows there is a correlation between the spiritual world and the scientific world. Let's jam on that, man. What do you think about that? And why did they have it so wrong? Why did it take them so long to figure it out?
Oh, man, that's a, you know, why did it take it so long to figure it out? You know, I think it's the truth for all things of why it takes everybody a long time to figure it out is because they have a paradigm that is different, right? So thinking that the world is a certain way gives you a certain lens of how you view the world, whether that's real or not. So sometimes the truth for most people, and I'm kind of speaking into, you know, as I speak into this conversation, I'm speaking into like all conversations, whether it's around personal development or spiritual development, it's like our way of viewing the world is what guides us to see the things that we are aware of or to see the things that confirm our belief systems. And a big part of doing something different or becoming something different is stepping outside of the current paradigm so that you can create anew something that's more aligned. You mentioned the 100K months, and that's a big part of it. Like, I'm going to kind of just say something about that. Most people in the industry, you know, think that there's a certain way to do that. think that there's a certain way to become that type of coach or that type of success. And a lot of times it's equated to, you know, the amount of work that you're doing or the amount of expertise that you have or the amount of hours or the sacrifices that you have to make. And for me, you know, one of the biggest things and the biggest gifts that I've had my whole life is I've always felt that I've been outside of the normal paradigm of how people have lived or, you know, how that, what life was about. And it just invited me to think differently about everything that I was doing.
Yeah, it's something that I think at some point, and I've seen your TED Talk, anyone who hasn't has seen Bucky's TED Talk, I mean, we'll put the link in the show notes, but take a look at it, or look for it. It's A New Way to Live, The Evolution of Human Consciousness. And congratulations, man. Thanks for sharing, you know, some heartfelt stories there. I was with you, man. You know, I was teary-eyed, the whole thing, man. You know, it takes a lot of courage to speak on a stage like that and speak from the heart and tell stories like that and be completely vulnerable. But you mentioned Maslow's hierarchy of needs there. I didn't discover that until somewhat recently in my entrepreneurial journey. Can you speak about that? Because people live on the bottom part of it most of their lives. And at some point, right, they start to elevate a bit and they don't realize that, oh, there's actually, you could predict where you're going. You could see where you're going.
Yeah. You know, none of this stuff is new. And that's the thing that everybody has to understand. Like, there's history of human evolution and there's history of spiritual practice and emotional practices and personal development practices. For me, I grew up in that industry, so I got to see it for a very long time. But there's disconnect because there's social norms around how we're supposed to be, and there's social constructs around, you know, in my opinion, there's a social construct that keeps us at a certain level of evolution. Part of what's changed over the last 15, 20 years is the information that's available to humanity has changed, right? When I was growing up, you know, I remember the first time I got a cell phone was in college. I remember the first time I got an iPhone was back in, I had the iPhone 3 back in 2010, 12, something like this. Okay. But the amount of information that's accessible to someone's pocket is transformational to what it used to be. Like when me and you were growing up, you know, I remember the days where, you know, if you wanted to see if someone was home, you had to walk to their house, right? Like you showed up at their house. Maybe you called their house, but you showed up at their house. So because the amount of information has changed, the level of human consciousness within humanity has also changed. And therefore, there's a conflict to what humanity knows is available versus their life experience. Right. So the talk was really about the evolution of human consciousness and understanding that humanity is at a place where there's this threshold that they're looking to move through, where the old paradigm around the 9-to-5 or sacrificing these different things or living in a certain way or living in the lower register or lower frequency of human evolution is really being challenged, and people are being invited into a new way of living, a new lifestyle of living, a new way of working, a new way of relationships, a new way of spirituality, a new way of health. And some of the current paradigms are in conflict of that. So, you know, the thing that I want to say about Maslow's hierarchy of need is that there's a very clear relationship between, in the TED Talk, I talk about the hierarchy of needs, I talk about the chakra system, and I talk about the map of consciousness. And I talk about the relationship between the three, and understanding that human evolution can be measured by frequency and spiritual evolution can be measured by frequency. And if you look at those three maps side by side within the TED Talk, I talk about the relationship, but also not only from an emotional standpoint, but from a frequency standpoint and also a color standpoint as it relates to the chakras. So history, right? Spiritual history is talking about the chakra systems in the East, and it's talking about the raising of energy, right? The raising of your human energy, and awakening different parts of your body system through meditation, through spiritual practice. But really what that does is that increases frequency and human evolution. So it's a long talk. It was funny. You're supposed to have 18 minutes for the TED Talk, right? And I did 22 minutes. So by somehow it got approved, but like, I spent a lot of time going into the basics of that work so people can understand the relationship between human and human development and spirituality, and frequency and the correlation between the two.
Yeah, no, it's a powerful talk. I like how you open it with that very personal story about your father. You know, it lets us into your world and in one of your most vulnerable moments, profound moments, I'm sure. Which you bookend, I don't want, you know, and spoilers here, you know, but you bookend it, you know, with a quote from your father,
which is powerful. But yeah, I highly recommend go checking that out. Like I said, I'll put the link in the show notes, A New Way to Live, Bucky O'Neill. But yeah, brother, let's jump into the mainstay of what people expect from this show regarding your eureka moment in life or business that caused a major pivot or a change.
Yeah, you know, there's been so many of them. I can name a couple. I know what I wrote down in the notes coming into this, but I can name a couple of them. I remember when I was in the fourth grade, and when I was in fourth grade, I was growing up in San Diego, and I used to drive from Encinitas up to Del Mar because my mom worked up there, and I used to go to school at Del Mar Heights. And I remember on the drive, on the cassette tape, we used to listen to the Celestine Prophecy. And this was back in, man, this was back in the early 90s, maybe the late 80s. And I remember staring out the window and watching the cars pass and staring into the distance and seeing the freeway pass. And I would do this for hours, and I would just find myself in these meditative states that was beyond myself. And that's kind of really first started when I realized that there was something unique about what I was doing and how I was living and how I viewed the world. Man, so many things. When it came to sports, you know, I loved playing sports as a young person. Part of the reason why I love sports is I love practice. I love the repetition of doing something and moving my body in such a way where I would lose myself. And in that, I would find myself. Later, I recognized what I was really finding. I was finding the divine. I was finding God. I was finding wisdom. I was finding, you know, intelligence. And I was connecting and tapping into that source of energy. And that would fuel me in my life. It'd bring energy into my life. It'd bring insight into my life in a way that I was, you know, as a young person, I didn't have the cognitive understanding to what it is I was doing. I thought it was just about sports and this process of sports. Later, I realized that I was really connecting to this high vibrational divine energy. I remember when I joined this program, I was 16 years old, and I went to this program called Super Camp. And at the time in my life, I was a teenager, and I was feeling, man, I was just feeling the normal teenage stuff, I guess. I was feeling like really disconnected from my human self. I was feeling really shameful and feeling like there was always someone different that I had to be in order to be accepted and loved. And it was my first taste outside of my family. You know, I grew up with an amazing father and mother, and I grew up in an amazing household and had all these different amazing things. But it, sometimes it takes an environment outside of your home environment to bring in an awareness to what's already there. And Super Camp was that for me. It allowed me to see myself and to see myself in groups and with others in a different way. I started coaching when I was 17. And that carried me through this process of, man, knowing my work, knowing how important this work of coaching really is, knowing how important this work of human development was. And then I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with that process of personal development and spiritual development, and expression, like really expressing myself and owning myself and being honest with myself and forgiving myself and loving on myself. And there was decades and decades of that work, and it still goes on. But that became a cornerstone of who I am. Like I fell in love with that process, traveling the world, learning different languages, discovering what life was really about, and moving away from personal development and then moving into spiritual development, studying different religions different spiritual practices, and living in Bali and traveling through Southeast Asia and studying with different people. All that to be said, I became a facilitator when I was 24, and I started speaking all over the world and running these transformational workshops. But all that to be said, to say that one of the big moments for me, it's like, it's funny how these moments are based on the foundation of who you've been and who you've become. Like I would say the big eureka moment in my career, man, there's so many. I remember being a facilitator. And I remember coming up in that craft. I remember loving that work. And I also remember this time I was working out in LA, and I was working with the former teacher of the year for San Diego County. And she was facilitating through the same program. And I thought that I knew some stuff because I'd been facilitating for a couple years. And I remember her sitting down with me and after the talk and kind of laying into me a little bit and talking to me about the neuroscience behind everything that I was doing. That I knew, like, hey, there are certain ways to facilitate, but I didn't know the neuroscience behind why I was doing it. And that was a big, big moment for me because it allowed me to elevate the way in which I was working. It allowed me to step into the facilitation game in a way that was different, and to really understand the why behind everything that was going on in my life, or that what I was doing from stage. So yeah, man, there's been a lot of them. I think one of the things that comes up for me is just also like, and this is the thing that I answered in the questionnaire, was all that to be said, to understand that when over the last several years, I've watched the coaching industry go into a really weird space. I've watched, it feels like almost like the Wild Wild West, in the sense that, anybody can be a coach. There is no credential. It is only, it's like when I was growing up, coaching meant something, right? It was like this dedication to service. It was this dedication to this real work that had real tangible outcomes. I think the marketization and the salesmanship of the coaching industry has taken away some of that depth of practice, and has brought people into a space of like, well, I'm a marketer, or I'm a salesperson. I'm not really a coach, and I'm great at marketing and I'm great at sales, but I'm not great at getting people results. And I watched that, and I watched people who when someone invests in a coach and someone really cares about what it is that they're doing, and they're saying, hey, I want to invest, $5, $10, $15, $25,000 into this result. Like, and that doesn't happen. That's a big deal, right? Like, it's a big deal because it breaks the trust between the coach and the client community. And I think, I watched that, and I watched what people were doing, and I watched how, the industry was leading. I was joining these different masterminds, and people were saying, okay, well, if you want to make 100K, or if you want to make multi seven figures, or if you want to make whatever it is, here's the formula to doing that. And the formula was essentially become a marketer and become a salesperson and run a marketing and sales business. And for me, like, I've been a coach my whole life. I grew up around a coach. Like, for me, the reason why I'm a coach is because I love coaching. Right? I don't want to become a marketer or salesperson. And I understand marketing and sales are a necessary part of the business, but I don't want to be the primary part of my business. So for me, I was like, how do I design a coaching model that puts me in my pocket and my expertise, and doesn't pull me so drastically outside of marketing management, sales management, in order to produce this result of 100K per month? I also saw that when people were doing that, what they were doing is that they were giving up their expertise, but they were also giving up their time. Right? Like, now I'm working 40 hours a week. Now I'm managing this team of setters and salespeople. Now I'm managing these Facebook ads. This is an invisible expertise. So I'm trying to like learn this thing. And that's something I never wanted to do either. I got three young kids, or at the time I had three young kids when I was really developing this. My youngest is now 5, my middle is 9, and my oldest is now 16. And growing up, I always wanted to be able to spend time with my family and raise my family, and not have to sacrifice my business or the ladder in order to do that. So that's a very long-winded way of saying that was my eureka moment.
Yeah. No, I love the 30,000, holistic perspective on it. I learned a ton. One standout for me is you're an OG coach. You're not the new wave of coaches. When I came into the industry of just business and had to accept the idea of coaching, because if you come from corporate like I did, any type of coaching, it sounded like therapy. It sounded like, oh, there's something wrong with me, but I realized, over very quick, short amount of time, I was convinced, like, hey, LeBron, the whole adage, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, they have coaches, you need a coach. I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Of course. But you were old school, 17 years old, dude. I didn't know that you were in it. So what year was that? Like, that was before
17 years old. That was 1998.
I said 98. So things were not, the internet did not have all the information in the universe like it does now. so things were, because I remember back in the day, this wasn't me. It was like people around me, maybe my dad with a cassette tape or CD of Tony Robbins or Jim Rohn, things like that. So that to me was like, oh, I guess that was coaching back in the day. But you're saying your father was of that generation.
Yeah, my father was of that generation. My father was actually, he was involved with a program called Money and You. He's involved with the Berklee Business School. He worked closely with a guy by the name of Marshall Thurber. Him and Marshall were the people that onboarded Tony into the accelerated learning model, which is the format in which he teaches his events today. I was the kid that grew up in that space. I was the kid that was the baby that was being passed around the workshop. And the reason why I say that is because I understand, for me, I was brought up in the essence of coaching before marketing and all that was the main essence. Like the real essence was about service. It was about transformation. It was about changing people's lives. It was about doing great work in the world, and really caring about people and the outcomes that they were getting both in their lives and business. And the vein of coaching that I came from was really about humanitarianism, right? Like my namesake, Buckminster Fuller, was a major influence on my father's life, on a lot of those people's lives. And his whole thing was about a better humanity. It's about understanding that when you free people up to do what they're really authentically meant to do, that there's a better humanity that shows up in the world, because ultimately people want to do good, and there's a greater purpose to their life that's beyond just working a 9-to-5 or doing stuff that they have to do in order to get, you know, pay their bills or to fulfill their lower needs, going back into Maslow's hierarchy. When you can get people out of the lower needs and you get them into the creative and the expression and the relationship needs, there's a lot that changes within how they show up in the world. And therefore there's a better humanity that takes place, because people are operating from a higher vibration and a higher frequency.
Mm. Yeah, dude, I love this. You're the first, or one of the first that I can remember, second generation of coaching clients and working with people with the old foundation of service transformation, you know, changing people's lives. And like you said, you nailed it. People who are coaching shouldn't be coaching. You throw a rock out the window and you hit 29 coaches who all say that they're expert at something, which is fine.
Sure.
You could be an expert at something. You know, my father-in-law is fantastic at stock, but he could never teach how to invest in stocks to save his life, like ever.
Yeah.
My dad, you know, great sales guy, can't teach me how to sell. So that, it doesn't mean you're great at teaching and coaching and holding people accountable. You and I talked briefly about the difference between mentorship and coaching. Can you expand a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think it's a great distinction. And I, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not boohooing the coaching industry. I think the coaching industry, there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of good things happening as well. I think there's just a pivot in the direction in which it's being led. That's really important. It's one of the things that I'm working on. I'm writing a book that's associated to, you know, the things that we've done and how we've coached and all that kind of stuff. But for me, you know, I think there's lots of people. I don't believe that there's a lack of experts. I think that people are misplacing their position publicly when it comes to their expertise. They think that it's about marketing, and they think it's about sales. And therefore, there's like this outward in type of expression of like, hey, I need to build a coaching business that is associated to what it is that I can sell. I need to build a coaching business and to associate to what people are, you know, what's the positive feedback of my marketing versus what is my expertise and how do I build a coaching around that? You know, for most people, their expertise lies in this arena called mentorship. And mentorship for me is, you know, here's the things that I've done or lived over the last 10 to 20 years. And essentially, I'm going to help you to get a similar or same result, both strategically and psychologically, in the next 12 to 18 months. So as an example, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've grown our coaching business. We've grown it to 100K. We work, you know, less than 20 hours a week. We only do the work that we love. And there's this strategic side of that, right? There's a strategic side of how we set up our life and business, what it is that we coach on, how we utilize group, how we utilize live events and the process of transformation in order to leverage the value and what it is that we're doing. But then there's also this psychological side, right? And people don't get that the majority of coaching is the psychology that's required to close the gap that is representative in the strategic process. So if you want to produce 100K months, you think that, oh, it's just the strategy. I need to, you know, 10 clients a month at $10,000 and I'm at 100K. What people don't realize is all the psychology that is associated to your self-worth, all the psychology that is associated to your messaging, all the psychology that's associated to your consistency, all the psychology that happens along the way where people get stuck. And that's where the coaching really takes off. So we use mentorship and we use business coaching as a way to really evolve people in their human evolution. We hold this carrot of the 100K months. We hold this carrot of the 20 hours a week. But the real work is the personal work that's required in order to close that gap. And that's what we help people to do.
Dude, I love this. This is why I gravitated towards you, because I identify very much with your avatar in that, you know, as we seek and grow, initially, you know, five figures, six figures and more per month, there is a part of you, you know, that says, am I worthy of this? Like, am I worthy of people paying $1,000 an hour for my time? Like, who am I? You know, and you start to question those things, even though you have a massive ton of value in whatever it is that you're good at. And if you can facilitate and express those ideas in a way that resonates and inspires action, then yeah, for sure. I'll pay for that, right? Someone will pay for that. But yeah, can you talk about that? Like, what is it within us? In all of your knowledge on psychology and human history, and that, like, where does that lack of worth come from?
Belief systems, right? It's kind of how I started the conversation of, like, how did it take so long? It's the same reason why it takes everybody so long, is because they have a certain belief system and a way of being and a pattern of being that they're stuck in, right? And a lot of those patterns come from when they were kids. A lot of those patterns come from the universal patterns, right? Like, you can see that there's, and this is the thing that I was saying earlier about the social agenda. It's like there's commonality within humanity because of the information that's being shared and the type of information that's influencing people and the structure in which we're growing up in. If you think about the school system as an example, like, where is that model built from and what is it designed for? Is it designed for innovators and entrepreneurs and passion-based people to be able to do the things that they want? Or is it designed for something else? Right? Like, it's not my job to tell you what it is for. It's I'm just posing the question, like, what is it actually the design of public school system in America? What is the design of it? And there's lots of things like that, right? So, you know, the thing about frequency and the thing about patterns is that they're consistent, right? And part of what happens in our lives is that belief systems are frequency. Okay, patterns and actions are frequency. So if I have a thought that, hey, you know, maybe I'm not good enough to be able to push this upper envelope of who I am or to earn X amount of dollars, there's a frequency association to that, but there's also a life pattern that's associated to that. All right, so that just kind of plays out as normal until it's interrupted, until you choose consciously to do something different. And in order to do that, it's just like going to the gym for the first time. There's like this resistance to changing who I've been. There's this resistance to changing how I've shown up and how I've lived. And that resistance oftentimes is, you know, surrounded by fear, worry, doubt, like, am I able to be able to do this new thing? Right. So without getting too psychological, I think the gym example is a really good example, right? Like, this idea of, like, hey, I want to go to the gym. I know that I'm overweight. I know that I'm not in the shape that I want to be. But there's this resistance of, like, oh, I got to do something different now. And everybody can relate to wrestling with that, right? And then there's this energy of, like, okay, I have to do this. And then you consciously choose it. And there's this momentum that starts to build in the consistency. But the thing that happens before that is why people are stuck, is that they're stuck in that resistance. They're stuck in that fear. They're stuck in that comfort of how things have been based on the belief systems of the past.
Yeah. I love that. And we could stick a little bit more with the gym analogy, because, like you said, it's very easy to understand. But when people yo-yo, you know, they lose the weight or they get into shape and then they just bounce back, you know, whatever, you know, months or years it takes to go back to whoever they were. You know, I guess Tony Robbins says this a lot, where, you know, your standard has to be elevated. Like, you have to view yourself like you're going back to your old standard when you were 300 pounds. And that's how you view yourself. So on a monetary level and success level, sometimes I'm aware, and I'm guessing, you know, I'm speaking for the audience here, that I'm self-sabotaging because, you know, for various reasons, because I'm like you said, it's probably fear-based where, oh man, what happens when I become a multimillionaire success with all this and that? And then all of a sudden you're like, what does that come with? You don't know, right? Fear of the unknown. What other type of things cause people to self-sabotage?
Man, lots of things.
How can they realize it's happening?
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is, like, most people don't realize what it is that they're doing. And that's the advantage of having a coach and having a different perspective, is that most people get stuck in whatever they're stuck in because they don't have the perspective to see themselves outside of themselves or the vantage point of someone who's done the work, right? Like, coaching is so valuable, right? To find someone who's done something similar to what it is that you want to do that can close the gap for you strategically and psychologically is invaluable. The speed in which you can get there is so much faster. Why take 20 years when you can do it in 18 months or in 12 months or in 6 months, right? Like that's the value of coaching. And if you gave the example of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and all these people, but every great person has been able to achieve what they've been able to achieve and more because of the coaches and the mentors that they've surrounded themselves by. All right. So if you want to accelerate your journey, right, that's what coaching is about. It's about speed. If you want to accelerate your journey, then coaching is invaluable. Because of the perspective that it gains you outside of yourself, right? It's like, if you've ever watched yourself on camera, if you ever videoed yourself doing something, there's a huge amount of value in watching that video because you get to see yourself from a different perspective. Most people can't see themselves in self-sabotage. Most people can't see themselves in their old patterns, and they're just doing it like it's normal and they don't realize the impact that it's having on them. The thing that you asked earlier brought up something for me. Self-sabotaging you were talking about, but you're also talking about
self-worth.
What's the piece? It'll come back to me. Ask me another question.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because I know you facilitate, and I looked a little bit at what you were doing. And I know there's unique aspects to it. I'm just looking at photos and reading some of the descriptors for events. Can you talk about what you guys do at your events that you take a lot of pride in because no one's doing it? It's unique. You know, it's you.
Yeah. You know, I think the way that we utilize the events, we run transformational experiences, and we do that as a part of our, it's inclusive in our mentorship. But part of the reason why we're doing that is events are accelerants, right? Experiences are accelerants. And when we think about the coaching industry, a lot of times we think about, you know, some type of coaching program, some type of module, some type of information or process-based thing that we're doing step by step. And those things are great. But when it comes to accelerating our identity, this was the thing that you were talking about before. You were talking about identity. You were talking about standards, right? When it comes to accelerating our standards, there's a fundamental shift that needs to take place in the experience of an individual. Right. So I can give you some of the most transformational times in my life. One of them was when I was 19 years old. I was playing junior college basketball. And I decided to take the year off because I had this opportunity to travel to Singapore. And I'd never been out of the country before. I mean, I've been to Mexico, but I'd never been like, you know, overseas. And I remember getting on a flight for 18 hours and I was super nervous and I was super scared, but I was like, I'm going to go do this thing. I remember getting on a flight for 18 hours. I was so nervous. I sat there the whole time. I didn't like stand up and my legs were swollen from sitting for that long.
Wow. All the way to Asia.
Asia, Singapore.
Dude.
And I remember getting off the plane and meeting people, different cultures, different food, different like way of living. And it was the first time, and I know this sounds kind of silly, but I was like, man, it was the first time where I was like, man, there's people living all over the world from a different paradigm.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
It was the first time I was able to like really see and experience outside of my own paradigm, different religion, different food, different culture, different language, but people living, humanity living in this different paradigm than what was my own. And it really opened me up and said, oh my gosh, that experience changed my life because it allowed me to see the world differently. I think if everybody here reflects on the transformational moments of their life, it's going to be tied to some level of experience. So part of the thing that we do is we craft these experiences, whether they're fire walks or board breaks or, you know, trust exercise, whatever it is, we design these experiences that lead to these greater insights of who we are and fundamentally change who we are. And we use those things as accelerants to the coaching program, as designed accelerants to the coaching program, because ultimately it's never just about the consistency, but we need these peaks that happen as well that allow us to move energetically. The thing I wanted to say earlier was about vision and standards, right? Like, and this kind of goes back into the TED talk a little bit. What can I do in order to have awareness to me self-sabotaging? Or how do I stay connected to what it is that I'm doing? And you say Tony Robbins talks about standards and you're going back to your standard. I think people underestimate the power of vision and specifically the frequency of vision. Vision is not just about like goals and ideas and predeterminations of like, hey, this is what I want to create in my life. It's about connecting to a frequency that is currently beyond yourself. So when I think about my vision in my business, when I think about my vision in my health, when I think about my vision in my finances or my relationships or my psychology or my emotional well-being, I'm not just thinking about outcomes. I'm thinking about an energy that the outcome is associated to. So when I think about the 100K month as an example, it's not just about the 100K, it's about the energy that that 100K represents. What does it represent for me? What does that mean for me? When I think about my mental health and my mental clarity, I don't just think about my ability to be able to speak clearly and to talk clearly and communicate clearly. I think about what is the frequency or the energy that that represents for me. When I think about my family, okay, and growing my family, whatever my vision is around my family, what is the energy? And what I'm doing in that process is I'm connecting deeply to the energy, the frequency of that vision. And again, I talk about this in the TED Talk, but the part of the benefit for this is understanding that frequency, just like this podcast, is information-based. Right? We think about frequency like energy. We think about like frequency is a vibe, right? But no, frequency is information. Everything that you're watching right now and listening to right now on this podcast is coming through frequency. All this information that you're hearing and seeing is coming through frequency, which means that if I tap into frequency, okay, a higher frequency, a higher vision, okay, I'm also tapping into information. And then from that information, new insights, new wisdom, new actions can emerge. And then what I'm doing is I'm now practicing the processes of faith. I'm practicing the process of trust and consistency, and I'm moving into the unknown action without any predetermination of what it's going to create. And now there's this sacred and divine dance that you're creating with the universe, with God, with source, with spirit. And there's this unfoldment of your life versus this predetermination and clear direction of your life. Now you're in the invisible unfoldment and the nature of who we are, just in the expression of your authentic self beyond your current awareness.
Mm. Yeah, dude. I'm looking at the time and I'm like, man, I want to go deeper on this if you have a few minutes. because, you know, I do want to get to, you know, one of my favorite segments, embracing the F word.
Yeah.
And then hearing your one word, which we can kind of go through quickly. But I think I'm labeling what you said there over the past 2 minutes. And you correct me if I'm wrong, and we can expand on this, but it sounds to me like manifestation.
Yes and no. I would say mostly no from a general standpoint. It's not about thinking about, I mean, in some ways the principles are the same. But in some ways it's not, because manifestation feels very self-generated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like, I want this brand new car, therefore I'm going to manifest this car. Okay. It's never about the things. It's about the frequency that the thing represents. Okay. So if I want a brand new car, what does the car represent?
Mm-hmm.
Does it represent freedom? Does it represent self-worth? Does it represent, gratitude? What does it represent? Does it represent importance, significance? What does it represent for you? Because what's more important than the car is the feeling or the frequency that it represents for you. And then by honing into the feeling, you'll realize that it's much more than just the car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Away from the tangible manifestations that people, I guess, associate manifestation with, like you said, cars, houses, whatever. I was more thinking along the lines of manifesting a vision for yourself. Like, so for one thing, when I go into this mode, I'll give you an example, is I envision me at my daughter's, because I have two, they're young, 9 and 6. But I had kids older. So I was 42 when I had Veronica, and she's 9 now. So I'm going to be an old ass man, right? When they get married eventually, unless they get married early 20s or teens. I anticipate being in my late 70s, 80s. And I promised them, and I envisioned this for myself, you know, like a dream, that I picked them up. Like, I am strong enough. I am in shape. I'm still in shape, and I could literally lift them. And they mentioned this to me, dude. They're always like, you're going to lift, because I still picked them up. I don't care how big they are. And and Veronica, my oldest, will go, Dad, you promised, right? You said you're going to pick me up at my wedding. So that's what I mean in terms of like envisioning a future for yourself and the feelings, the vibrational pull of what that does for you, what that represents. That to me is health. That to me is being, you know, all the things wrapped up in that one vision.
Yeah. Yeah. The invite that I would have is, what does that represent for you? what is that doing that thing of you envisioning lifting them up? What does that mean for you? Like, what are the feelings that come up for you around that?
Yeah, that I took care of myself, that I led by example in my health and my mental health, my spirit, and like all the things. Like, I am this person that now people look to, because there's going to be a lot of young kids in that room. They like, man, look at, like, I always remember going to weddings and I see that old dude that doesn't look his age, right? And he doesn't act his age, and he's dancing and he's singing. And he's like, whoa, he's like 30 years younger than you would think. That's what I want to represent. Like, I'm the guy.
How does that make you feel? How's that make you feel?
Amazing. Like, hey, I did it. I lived life to its fullest. I took care of myself.
Yes.
I was very aware of myself.
Cool. Yeah. So this is the process, is that it's deeper, right? And I appreciate you going through it with me. Like, it's deeper, right? So part of what you're doing when you're going to the deeper levels of emotion, and this is the challenge that most people have, is that they have a challenge in their feeling senses. We're not taught to feel, okay? Especially as men, but it's also as women. There's a lot of shame around feeling and around emotion. And the feeling sensitivity is a really important part of this process. So when I say, you know, what does that represent? And tell me more about that. And what else, right? And you talked about the sense of fulfillment, right? There's one more question there of like, what does that really meant that you've lived a life to its fullest? Like, what does that mean for you?
Well, for me, it's always legacy, right? I want them to be able to do that for themselves sooner than that, because I didn't figure that crap out until I was in my 40s. So I'm hoping that, you know, setting them up with the foundation very young, they can live that, you know, like for you, you were blessed to have that around you at a very young age. You know, I didn't have that. So I'm hoping to be that example, like your father was for you, for them, so that they can just...
And why is that important? Yeah. Why is that important for you?
Because I didn't have it. And and I feel like it was time wasted. I could have lived a happier
And how does that feel to have done that for your kids? How does that feel?
Dude, you're going to get me to... I got to break down in the show. Let's see.
Yeah.
What does it feel for my kid? Like, I mean, it's my purpose.
Yeah. And what does that feel like? What does purpose feel like for you?
Like joy, like love.
Yep. There's one more. Joy, love.
Purpose, joy, love. You know. Satisfaction.
Yep.
Accomplishment.
This is what I mean by frequency. Okay. You can chase that outcome of lifting your child and being strong and all that kind of stuff, but you have to realize that the real driving force is this. It's joy. It's love. It's satisfaction. It's accomplishment. It's that I was good enough, that I left a legacy, that I did something different than my parents did. And when you come from that energy, the outcome is different and the approach is different. And you realize that there's more of that available outside of the context of just lifting your children up at their wedding. And when your focal point becomes the frequency and not the thing, you realize how abundant that frequency is in all the areas of your life, and how really cultivating that frequency is, it's holistic. It's not just about this one moment, right? But that one moment gives us the human map to what's actually important to us emotionally, what our purpose really is, what our legacy is really about. And for me, you know, part of the work that we do is really about getting people into that feeling sensation so they can start to actually live from that space again in all the areas of their life. And that's what becomes transformational, is that it's no longer about the external thing. It's not about, it's not about the lift up at the wedding. It's about how I live my life every single day in congruency to who I am and what's actually really important to me in all the areas of my life. And, you know, it's so many people think about, like, it's about what I'm doing in my life. And it's really, it's less about what you're doing. It's more about how you're doing it that matters. And that's the frequency transformation, right? I appreciate you going there. Most people aren't willing to go there, and because of it, they're chasing the thing and not living from the space of who they really are and what's really going on there. There's a big conversation around that and what that really means and what that could all look like, but hopefully that's helpful.
No, I appreciate you taking me there. You know, it's good. It's a great example of, you know, a very small sample size of some of the work that you did, you know, played out here in real time, which was great. So thank you. But yeah, let's get to, if you have time, I would love to kind of
go. I got time, man. Let it run.
Yeah. Embracing the F word, dude, which is my favorite thing. Cause my favorite quote, one of my favorite quotes is, failure is success in progress. So mm-hmm. let's embrace the F word by shining a light on something you failed at and learned from that you can share.
Yeah, man, there's been lots of things. I think the school of thought that I grew up in is that there's no such thing as failure. There's only learning. And as long as you're willing to learn and grow, then there's, you know, there is no failure, you know, and that whole thing, even the word failure is a paradigm shift, right? This failure to learning. It's what this idea of failure is what keeps us stuck because we don't want to fail, because we don't want to be perceived as a failure. And in that, it also keeps us small and keeps us safe. So, man, I was married before, and I share this in the TED Talk. I was married for 7 years. And the first night of before I was getting married, my father came up to me and he said, hey, you know what? If you want to walk out on this thing tomorrow, I got your back. And I remember the first year of marriage, and I remember I lived in Bali, and we're running this Airbnb, or we wanted to run an Airbnb. We were running these villas. And I remember being in this argument around marriage. And she was saying, hey, you know, marriage is about compromise. And I said, no, marriage is about creation. And it's about what it is that we want to create together. It's not about compromising what it is that we, who we are in order to be something together. And I remember when I made that compromise and I said, okay, all right, it's about compromise. And I let go of it. And that was really the beginning of the end. It was probably within the first 6 months of us being married. But then I did everything that I could. My parents were married for 48 years. So it wasn't in my paradigm to get a divorce. And, you know, I did all the personal development stuff. I fought this thing so hard to do everything that I could in order to save this marriage, to the point where I was literally, we moved back, as 5 years later, we moved back to San Diego, and I was working this construction job, digging holes for a living, because that's what I thought my wife wanted. That's what I thought was going to make me a good husband. She had a father that worked a 5 to 9. And she liked that schedule. She liked that schedule of consistency of knowing where I was going to be, predictability. Even though it was less money, she liked the predictability of my schedule and the money and all this kind of stuff. And I was justifying this life. I was working at the Port of Long Beach, literally digging holes and doing construction. And I was justifying this life. And I was saying, well, I'm able to go speak, doing the events when I want to go do the events. And I get to be outdoors all day. But there was this time where, man, I was suppressing so much. I was, you know, drinking every single day. I was smoking cigarettes. I was overweight, eating all kinds of crappy food. And I remember where it all started to fall apart is when I started to envision myself as a construction worker. And it was interesting because my parents and everybody in my life was just watching this thing. But it is really one of the biggest learnings of my life. I started to envision my life as a construction worker. I started to envision my life as like, one day I'm going to be in that red truck and I'm going to be a foreman and I'm going to be making my, you know, $160,000 a year and it's going to be great. And part of what happened in that moment, like simultaneously, was the divine intervened, right? What I would say was a God intervened. And I say this story because I think for everybody, there's, especially if you're watching this still and if you're still listening to this, there's probably a calling on your life that you resonate with this message with. And I think a lot of people have a calling in their life, and the divine is always looking to intervene. The divine is always looking to communicate with you and help you to navigate to that divine calling or that divine purpose. And when you go too far off track, the communication gets louder. When you're on track, that communication also gets louder in the positive versus the negative, but it's always directing you back home. And that's what happened to me. I started to envision this thing and I started to go through this process of like, I can see myself in this truck. And then all of a sudden everything started to fall apart. The person that I was working under got fired. The job that I was at, you know, was losing place. And I remember calling the guy that got me the job and I said, hey man, what's going on? He said, hey, I'm actually surprised that you're still here. I thought you were just kind of transitioning. Like, you know, I think it's time for you to look for something else. And I was like in this chaos. And then simultaneously I get this call from a good friend of mine who was working for Tony. And this was back in, man, when was this? Back in 2015, 2000, I don't know, something like this, 2015, 16. There was a time where they thought Tony was going to lose his voice. And they thought that, oh, you know, he might not be, maybe you heard about this. But long story short, my buddy calls me and I'm working construction. He calls me and he says, hey, you know, they think Tony's going to lose his voice. So we're putting together a contingency plan. And anyways, your name got put in a hat. Do you want to try out to be the next Tony Robbins? And And this was like, and you know, there's all this stuff happening, right? And I just remember the feeling of being in construction, watching it all fall apart, and then having it shift and realizing there's a longer story here, right? That is associated to how it led me to what I'm doing today, how it led me to the work that, and pulled me back into that work. But the long and the short of it is, you know, I decided that at that moment that never again would I compromise who I was, never again would I sacrifice who I was, never again would I not be true to the calling that I have on my life. And these are things that I knew and these are things that I practiced, but I was so caught up in the relationship and the identity of who I thought I needed to become that I was sacrificing those things consciously and unconsciously to do the thing that I thought I was supposed to be doing, right? Doing the things that I thought was making me a good husband and a good man and a good human and a good best version of me. I was sacrificing all the things that I knew intuitively, all the things I knew intrinsically, all the things that I knew from my life experience to do something different in order to be in the perception of success, in the perception of acceptance and love. And what I was doing is I was sacrificing my essence. I was sacrificing my work. I was sacrificing my divine calling. And the second that that shifted, the divine intervened. And the second that I accepted it, everything in my life changed. Everything from my health, my career, my mental practices, my family, everything shifted and pulled me into what it is that I am today. And when people talk about life and people talk about work and people talk about frequency, I don't talk about it as something that I'm cultivating in my life. I talk about it as a devotion. I'm devoted to this frequency. I'm devoted to this calling. I have full faith that this calling and this work and this frequency is pulling me in directions that's beyond my recognition. And it's not my job to know. It's my job to trust and practice faith and to act in kind. And that's the life practice and the business practice that I've created. And it's created the most, and don't get me wrong, I haven't created it. Okay. I've followed it. I followed it because that was what was on my heart to do. And it's led to the most magnificent things in my life.
I love that. Thanks for that last part, especially because I think that I came to that sort of realization too, you know, that come to Jesus moment in my life was very much linked to faith in that I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff. Yes, monetary success. Yes, you know, titles, you know, all this stuff, right? That you can kind of put on a resume and put on a website, but I still feel empty. And that always happened. Even when I was in my version of the construction job, same thing. Like there was a hole that needed to be filled. Yeah. That was my purpose was a divine purpose. And I was like, whoa, this is it. Like you, dude, this is my life's work, man. So thank you for sharing that and your version.
Yeah.
Cause that's very powerful. And it just inspires the heck out of me, which is how the show started, you know, and why you're here. You inspired me in the brief moments that we were together. So that speaks highly of your character and your voice. Brother, how can people reach you before I ask the last question, but what's the best way that people can reach you and potentially do some work together?
Yeah. The best way to reach me is you connect me on social. You know, it's so interesting. You know, I'm developing my social platforms. I've historically haven't done anything like, you know, and I've done it from a perspective of, you know, in the coaching industry, everybody believes they need all this stuff. I need to have social media. I need to have all this website. I need to have all this stuff that justifies and qualifies me to be an expert. And we've done none of that. We've done no websites. We've done hardly any social media. The only social media that I'm actually kind of active on is Facebook, not that active on Instagram. And part of the reason why we've done it like that is just to prove like, hey, you don't need all this stuff. You don't need all this stuff. Everybody thinks they need all this stuff and they get wrapped up in, oh, it's got to be perfect. And my social media's had 10,000 followers. And if we don't have 10,000 followers, then I'm not, you know, legitimate, right? And it's like, no, just be great at what you do. Be great at what you do and build a model that is actually really leverageable when you're not looking to work with hundreds or thousands of clients, but you're looking to mentor, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 clients a year max. That's going to grow you your seven-figure business so that you can have your time and your life back. Mm-hmm. Be great at what you do. And when you're great at what you do, people will find you.
For sure. Right? Yeah. So,
The best way to find me is just on Facebook. There'll be more social media stuff. We're in a new season now where we're doing more stuff. So legacyandleverage.com is the website. Bucky.O'Neill is the handle on social. I put my number in here. If you want to text me directly, you can. It's 323-397-7989. You can direct message me and I'm happy to respond back to you. But yeah, those are the ways to connect with me.
I love it. Yeah. Thanks for that, dude. And just for historical reference here, you're only the second person to ever give out their phone number on this show after 300 plus episodes. So yeah, hopefully you wrote that down. If not, we'll put it in the show notes. Dude, before we part ways for now, in one word, how do you help people?
Results.
Love it. Love it.
Do you want me to elaborate?
You can elaborate, dude, but I think it's pretty clear. You can elaborate for sure. I always let it breathe, let pregnant pause. But if you want to elaborate for sure.
Results. Results matter. Okay. And when it comes to your life, when it comes to your business, when it comes to the things that you're looking to do, at the end of the day, it's about results. Whether that's your results for your clients or the results that we produce for you. For me, coaching is about results. It's not about, who you're working with and the esteem that they have. It's not about the community. It's not about the strategy. It's not about, how great the things that they have done are. It's about your results and the consistency and the speed to the results in which you're looking for. So we only take on people that we think are great at what they do and that we know that are going to get a result. If you're a coach out there, I'd invite you to do the same thing. At the end of the day, results matter. It's always about results. So that's what we do. That's the one word. We help people to get real results.
I love it. I love it, dude. I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for spending some time and look forward to continuing the conversation.
Let's go.
Thanks, bro.
Thanks, man.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.